now. Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to this Monday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, fresh from a busy weekend and raring to go. Why was the weekend busy? Why is any weekend busy? I have some of my biggest fun on the weekend, Saturday night. I'm your humble producer of Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch. John in Australia, Bruce in North Carolina. And through the miracle of broadcast internet, we bring it all together right here in our secure, undisclosed location in the hills of wild, wonderful West Virginia. And we do the same thing on Sunday night with Bruce Birch's All Things Reconsidered. All Things Reconsidered, Fourth Estate Radio, and of course this Head On with little old me, Bob Kincaid, the cornerstones of the In the Birthing Head On Radio Network. The horn, if you will. But I am, as I said, tickled to death to be with you this evening, and plenty of stuff piling up over the weekend that I think that we need to get after this evening. Also, of course, alongside me here, my lovely wife, Agnes, at the controls to the heart of the sun, and she'll be taking your calls tonight. You heard the phone number, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it. Email is equally simple, bob@headonradio.com. A great deal of the Sunday talk shows, of course, or at least some portion of them, were taken up with the issue of port security. Skeletor, director of Homeland Security, director of Union Security, director of National Security. What the hell's wrong with National? Why Homeland? Yes. Lurch. Homeland. Doesn't Michael Chertoff look a little bit like Lurch on a hunger strike? No, he looks like Skeletor, I know. But he came out and said, this deal with the United Arab Emirates to sell them our ports is, it's been gone over by some very reliable people in the Bush administration who wouldn't stand to make a blessed dime out of the whole process. And, of course, our good friend Kyle wrote in with regard to that little debacle. And said, is it just me or is this a bad idea? I love that one of the ports run by the Saudis is New Orleans. Great. A major U.S. port under massive reconstruction in an area that they can't get under control after a natural disaster is not a reason to be concerned about national security, especially in light of the fact that, back it up over here. Yeah, bring it back. Wait a minute. You want bin Laden shipping? Yeah, that's down there at Pier 8. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. Because, after all, we know that 15 of the hijackers who attacked us, if indeed they did attack us on 9/11, and it was, all the conspiracy theory stuff. 15 of the hijackers were Saudis, and two of them were from where? That's right, the United Arab Emirates, the same people that want to buy our ports. Now, I don't live close by, so I've got to kind of guess. But anybody care to give me an idea of how far it is as the crow flies from the port of Baltimore to Washington, D.C., because Baltimore is part of the deal, you know. It's not very far on the map. Our great big United States map where we put all our little pushpins from all our friends and correspondents and whatnot. Where we put There's not that much difference between Baltimore and D.C. If you like 9/11, wait till the United Arab Emirates gets hold of the Port of Baltimore. You're going to like it even better. But, of course, there's nothing to worry about. It's all been vetted by the Commission for International Investment or Federal Commission for International Investment, something like that. And they looked at it and said, well, can we make a buck on it? It looks good to me. Okay, so that's, but wait, it's not a done deal yet, even though Dear Leader has said that it is. Why do I say that? I'll tell you why I say that. Because, uh-oh, the people who really get the attention of this administration have become upset. That's right. I got today in my email box, urgent, help keep our country secure by keeping control of our ports. Dear Bob, visit the new American Family Association Superstore today. Huh? What the? Normally, we don't just ask you to participate in issues such as this, but we feel that this one justifies your involvement. What's this got to do with me going to the American Family Association Superstore and buying a I Hate Women's Innards T-shirt or something? Well, never mind. Our port operations in New York, New Jersey, Baltimore, New Orleans, Miami, and Philadelphia have been or soon will be purchased by Dubai Ports World, a state-owned company in the United Arab Emirates, a firm that manages port facilities. The purchase was cleared by an obscure federal panel, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, with little fanfare. So these people who usually spend their time emailing snippets from dirty NBC television shows and urging people to try to take control of women's insides have now turned their attentions to foreign policy. And I'll tell you, this makes it problematic for me. In my gut, I got the idea that selling these ports, the control of these ports to the United Arab Emirates is, you know, not real smart. On the other hand, there's a real Groucho Marx response in me to this thing from the American Family Association. Groucho Marx, you remember the song, what is it? Is it From Day at the Races, Whatever You're For, I'm Against It? Because sharing a common purpose with the American Family Association and Reverend Donald Wildman just feels dirty. And of course, I have a different point of view in this whole port thing than Reverend Donald Wildman does. Donald Wildman feels this way because Donald Wildman is a racist, and he is a dominionist, and he is a theocrat, and he is a fascist. Little old me, I just love America. But you can tell that these people are willing to lie to get what they want, because, what does it say, help our country, keep our country secure by keeping control of our ports? Shh, don't anybody tell the mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging right, we don't control those ports already. Right, really. That control was held by a British company. That's who the United Arab Emirates are purchasing the rights from. It's more complex than it does seem at first glance. But, you know, we're liberals, we're progressives, we're Democrats, we're decent people, and we are capable of dealing with complex issues. Now, my question, why was it sold to the, you know, no offense to our friends in the UK, but I don't know, who runs the Port of London? Who runs the Port of Dubai? Is the Port of Dubai on the open market? Is Copenhagen on the open market? How about Lyon? How about Marseille? How about, wherever the Piraeus used to be in Greece? Is that on the open market? How about Rio de Janeiro? Is that on the open market? Caracas, Venezuela? Monterrey, Mexico? No? Tokyo Bay, is that the port of no, not on the Welcome to the free market, friends and neighbors. You didn't know it, but your ports had already been sold out from under you. It is complicated, isn't it? And it's distressing. And, of course, you know, Skeletor Chertoff said, well, of course, security is up to us. We'll be taking care of security. Good one. Good one, Skeletor. You mean taking care of security like it's taken care of right now, where every port in the United States is vulnerable to terrorist attack via container ship? Because there is no security in our ports? You mean, is that how you mean? Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. So, again, it's a little more complicated than it appears. The United Arab Emirates government is generally pro-U.S., but the September 11th hijackers traveled easily through the country, and Al-Qaeda-linked groups have used its banking system. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma... Now, we all know about Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, don't we? He's the guy that said there was wild lesbian sex in Oklahoma junior high schools when he was running for Senate. Yeah, that Senator Tom Coburn is pleading with the administration to reverse the decision. At a press conference outlining his opposition, he said, handing the keys to U.S. strategic ports to a regime that recognized the Taliban is not a sound next step in our war against Turkey. And then they give you a link to the Washington Times article. Leave it to the American Family Association. God knows there's articles in MSNBC, articles at, every major news outlet. What's the AFA link to? Oh, yeah, that's right. The AFA links to the Mooney Times. Now, I said it Friday night, and I stand by it. We are dealing with, we are opposed to people and fighting against people who aren't very smart. I mean, if like I said, if you want to get in the fight, get in the fight. You'll enjoy it, because once you punch these bullies in the nose once or twice, you'll have their attention and they'll run away crying, talking about the mean, ferocious liberals. That's right. They don't even understand that we don't control the ports now. Pathetic, isn't it? Tell you what, let's take a break. It's a Monday night version of Head On. You're welcome to chime in any way you care to. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
One of the many things people expect schools to do these days is inspire students to be creative. Hello, I'm Richard Thompson. Educators and psychologists agree. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff like fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste. Please support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
All righty. 23 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. So we know that in the American Family Association, we know that they're racially motivated. They're afraid that a bunch of people wearing bedclothes are going to be running around the port in Philly. And they don't have any, they're not at all concerned with national security or anything resembling it. But it is a problematic issue. For me, it's an American issue. It's a question of what our national priorities are. How did this stuff come to be sold off? And bear in mind, I'm a straight up kind of guy. If I find out that this stuff was sold off during the Clinton administration, which I doubt, I'll tell you straight up that I don't approve. So, I mean, it is what it is. And an email from our friend, our Wales correspondent, Andy. He says, just wanted to correct something about holidays over here. 4 weeks minimum paid for everyone and 6 weeks for civil servants. Oh, darn the luck. Only 4 weeks.
How are you?
Gee, most American firms, you have to work there for a year before you get one. 1 week of vacation. You got to work there for a year to get one. Go figure. He said, still better than the Americans get. Yeah, it is. He said, by the way, I will be listening in tonight as always, and I keep forgetting to thank the Union of Carpenters and Millwrights when I call, so thanks to them. Later. Andy, thanks for remembering them. It means a lot for their efforts to be noticed. That's how this program happens. Later in the show tonight... Blasted on. I've been telling you about a book. It's called The United States of Appalachia by a gentleman by the name of Jeff Biggers. And I want to share a little bit with you from it, so please don't let me forget. This is a book you want to own. If you're interested in Appalachian or Southern culture at all, you want to own this book. Jeff Biggers, the United States of Appalachia. You can, of course, go through the Barnes & Noble and Amazon links at Ben Birch's White Rose Society .org and order the book there. I believe you will be profoundly interested in what it has to say. And I ran across something in it over the weekend that I want to share with you, because we have a tendency to think that everything that's going on right now has never happened before. And it's we're all guilty of it. It's part and parcel of our sort of national attention deficit disorder. You know, hell's bells, we can't remember what happened the 3 years ago in the Bush administration, just because there were so many crimes and so much garbage and the filth spewing from the White House since January 20th, 2001, that remembering stuff further back than that is doggone difficult. So I want to share something with you from this book later in the program to sort of put things in perspective, because it is all perspective. And if we have the right perspective on our side, it's going to go a long way toward our being able to win this fight, which I do believe we can do. We can. It's not that we will. We can. If we fail in it, it will be our failure. If we succeed, it will be our success. But there is no guarantee, you know, they can't beat us. We can't, I mean, if we are beaten, it will be our doing. And that's, you know, it's entirely possible because, once again, we do have a real talent for the, what do we call it, the circular firing squad. Let's go to the phones real quick. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. Yo, Bob. Bob. Oh, we are off to a raring start. So that being the case, I guess instead we will take our bottom of the hour break and come back. Wait. Oh, okay, then well, just put it through. I'm sure it is, Bob. Hey, you're head on.
Hello.
How you doing, Bob?
Hey, sorry. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, we got so many buttons, it's so easy to go wrong here.
I do too. I got a lot of buttons. But anyway, hey, I was listening to you. You were talking about the United States of Appalachia.
Appalachia.
Yeah, Appalachia. Okay. Appalachia, Appalachia. Okay.
You say tomato, I'll say tomato.
You say tomato, I say tomato, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. But do people of this nation understand how many of those white people, you know, came through that country?
Oh, virtually the entire nation at some point in time. And white people and brown people and red people, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. It really is. If you study the history of this country, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, goodness.
The first district, one of the things that this book points out, and if you're one for sitting down with a good read, you're going to want this one, Bob.
I know.
The first district of Washington was in the Appalachian Mountains. It wasn't at that juncture of Virginia and Maryland.
Absolutely.
In the swamp.
The first
district of Washington was in northeast Tennessee.
The voices, okay,
mm-hmm.
The people of Appalachia, they are the voices of this nation. They are the people. They're the first people. But they really are. You know, if you go back far enough, you know, I don't know about this Christopher Columbus thing, but if you go back far enough, you realize that this is the beginning, the heart, the true beginning of our nation. And they're just, oh, goodness gracious, they're all stuck in their own heads. They don't even, oh, Glenda came home today and she said, one of them gals down there at work, she says, well, hey, they're taking our ports away. They can't do that. I'm gonna go home and I'm gonna write my senator. I'm gonna call my congressman. And Glenda says, well, it's about time you opened your eyes. Okay?
Because
she's a real pig looking. She's been, hey, they will not. And it says, well, huh? How'd you know about this? And she says, well, I've known about it for quite a while. I've known about it for quite a while because you won't let me speak because, you know, hey, it's got something to do with politics. So Glenda does not speak her mind in front of Republicans until the Republicans get nuts about an issue that we've known about for, what, weeks now? We've known they've been doing this, Bob,
yeah,
and they don't even... They, all of a sudden, they're all going crazy. Well, I'm going to write my senator. I'll write my congressman.
But you know what, Bob? They can write until hell freezes over for all I'm concerned, because I have no sympathy for them. Honest to goodness,
I don't, Bob, because
you know what?
Either.
They don't realize that they're going to get the shiv put between their ribs just like the rest of us.
Yeah, well.
The only thing is, they enabled the guy with the shiv in his hand. I didn't. You didn't. Decent people didn't.
No, hey, Bob.
Yeah.
They put the boots on the Gestapo. They gave the Gestapo his marching orders, and they told him to go out there and get anybody that's different from us.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, it's becoming an epidemic. I read a story from USA Today over the weekend, Bob. Mayor Daley in Chicago, yeah, I know he's a Democrat. He wants to hang security cameras in every bar that's open after midnight.
Well, how about that guy down in Austin who wants to put them in the houses of people that have problems with police?
Yeah,
it's the same difference.
This is
anybody that does not march to our orders will be monitored. Hey, no, it's everybody will be monitored, and if they don't march to our orders, we will put them in the, what do they call them things? I mean, goodness gracious, they have been building these camps in my country and west of us to place, what do they call them? A horde?
Yeah, alien hordes.
Yeah, an illegal alien horde that's going to pour across our borders. No, they didn't put those. They're not building those camps for an alien horde.
Nah, there's a little
bunk. Them for you.
Yeah, there's a little bunk in the barracks. It's got Bob written on it. Sure.
Yeah. It's got Bob Mattson written on it too. But guess what? All they're going to get is Skeletor, because I'm going to take him and anybody that comes to my door. I will be that Jew that stands in the door with a hole that take. No, not.
I understand your meaning.
I'm not talking about Condoleezza Rice. I'm talking about a sharp instrument that you dig into the ground.
Oh, I was a little slow on the uptake there, Bob.
Huh?
I was a little slow on the uptake.
Okay. I'm not going to stand in a door with a hole. I'm going to stand in a door with a real hole that's a sharp instrument that digs into the ground and digs up Nazis and stomps their skulls into hell. Not Condoleezza. Kind of sleazy Rice. Okay?
Right.
That's kind of hole that I wasn't talking about. Okay?
I was talking
about the kind that actually does some good work. And there are times in this, I mean, son, all I want to do is go fishing, but they won't let me. So I'm going to have to bring them to war. I'm going to bring it to war. They want war. They're going to have war. They want blood. We'll give them blood.
Well, and I mean, look. Now back up, Bob. Look to the ports issue. This ports issue. How could this work to the Bush administration's advantage? And bear with me for just a moment, please.
Okay.
There are a lot of people out there, and there seems to be a mounting crescendo of talk about 9/11 and people saying, oh, well, you know, we finally understand the Bush administration did 9/11. 9/11, it's not just their negligence, it's their fault. They did it. It was Operation Northwoods all over again. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here, first of all, they marginalized themselves by doing that. But second of all, 9/11 is over, Bob. 9/11 is over.
No.
And yes, it is. Yes. 9/11.
Hallelujah.
Wait, Bob, wait. 9/11 is over. And we're beginning to see how it was pulled off. And we're beginning to ask some questions about that.
Wait, Bob.
The trick is not to figure out how they did 9/11, but to figure out how they're going to do the next one.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Now, no. Wait, Bob. I'm right on this one. And I will defend it. I will defend this one to the ground. The trick is to figure out how they're going to do the next one.
How they're going to blow up 15 cities at the same time, right?
No, not necessarily. But how they're going to do the next one, and what is the first natural? What would be the most beneficial thing in the world for scapegoat purposes? The most beneficial thing in the world would be to have some of our, those people, the Muslims, have them running our ports so that they would be there for easy targeting.
Yes, I understand that part of it, and I know they're setting them up for it, but Bob, please, bear with me for a moment, okay?
Okay.
If you are a true American, okay, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, I don't care about any of that. If you understand where we came from, okay, then you will understand what the people, the true people, and many, many thousands of them died in a city called Fallujah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the Alamo, okay, and the cry that went out across Texas that brought many thousands to the fight, it was Remember the Alamo. Now, stop your thinking about America or the United States and think what the Arab world is saying right now.
Yeah, I don't know what the Arabic is for Remember Fallujah, but I can pretty well guess that they're using it on a regular basis.
They name their firstborn daughters Fallujah. They name the fathers and the mothers name their first born daughters, Fallujah, across the Arab nation. They name them Fallujah. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That is the name of every Arab born or, I guess, Muslim born daughter across the world today is Fallujah. If they name her Fallujah, think about it, Bob.
It's a reminder. It's something I remember the Alamo. These people are still remembering Jerusalem in the 12th century. Okay?
Absolutely. And
there are children in America that are unborn and undreamt of 3 generations down the road that will die, Bob, for what George Bush did and started in March of 2003. In the Muslim world, in the Arab world, the memory, and this isn't racist, it's just a sociological fact. Vengeance is passed down from father to son to father to son to grandson, great-grandson, great-great-grandson. It is passed down until the revenge is accomplished.
Absolutely. They and we have bought ourselves a world of woe. Now, how do we stop it? How do we stop this murderous machine? How do we do it?
That's the million-dollar question.
Okay. How about this? Rice grows again in Vietnam. The Vietnamese people are not vengeful people. They just want peace.
No, okay?
The Iraqi people are not vengeful people. If you allow them to have peace in their homeland, hey, forget about your dirt fatherland or the whatever I did last time I talked to you. I said this, Bob. Okay? You cannot wrest democracy. You have to establish it yourself.
You're right. It comes from the heart of an indigenous people, Bob. It doesn't. You can impose communism at the point of a gun. You can impose fascism at the point of a gun. But you cannot impose democracy.
It's absolutely impossible.
It's absolutely impossible, and it runs contrary to the very definition of democracy.
It runs absolutely contrary to that thing. I think Tom Hartman said it. We have democracy ingrained in our DNA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every human being wants to be free.
Well, back up a minute, Bob, because the fact of the matter is, if you look at history, oh boy, I'm going to make people's eyes roll back in their head now.
Okay.
The Athenian democracy and the Roman Republic upon which the American government was founded, in large part, the Athenian democracy lasted maybe 100 years, and it was bang back to oligarchy. The Roman Republic. Not a whole lot, a couple or 300-400 years, and boom, you get an empire. Democracy is something that if you have it, you must jealously guard it. And there are those historians who say that democracy died in the United States with the Civil War.
What was it that Benjamin Franklin said to the citizen that asked him, what kind of government have you given us?
He said, a republic if you can keep it.
That's right. So it's not up to the oligarchy or to the emperor or to the George Bush wannabe king of the universe. It's up to the people, okay? And it is a republic if you can hold it, if you can keep it. It's up to you. It's not up to Ed, who is a... Oh, I've listened to his voice, and I'd like to meet him, too, along with Jim. I would like to sit down with the guys in a bar someplace and have a couple of beers and just shoot the breeze and just kind of figure this thing out. Like I told Agnes, I said, I'm trying to figure it out. The thing is, Bob, it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It has to do with you and me and my family and your family and every family across this planet. And the thing is, it doesn't have anything to do with politics. It has nothing to do with which country you whichever country you're born in. It has to do with we the people. And when it's we the people of this planet, not we the people of this whatever, it's we the people of this planet, we will throw off. I mean, I'll be long gone when they do it, but they will be more beautiful. I mean, I saw your daughter, and goddamn, you are... Oh, I said the wrong word.
That's okay. I'm an ugly son of a gun. I know that.
And you are about the whitest guy I've ever met.
Yes, I am. I'm like Edgar Winter. Everything but the pink eyes. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm a freaking albino. I've got everything but the pink eyes. I'm a freaking albino.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, no. You are and you have a beautiful daughter. Oh, my goodness. She is.
Yeah, I got three beautiful daughters.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And all of the people is, but it doesn't matter if you're albinist or whatever. I don't know where you came from. I have no idea where I came from. All I know is this, is that all people are the same. And I bet if I took your DNA and stretched it out far enough, I could find out that, you're not as perfect as you think you are. Yeah?
Hell no. I'm Mr. Bob.
That's the wonderful thing about you. You were born with two left feet because you actually care about others. You don't care about Bob Kincaid. You do care about Agnes, and you care about your children.
Yeah.
And I know you care about me, and I know you care about my lady, and I know you care about my children. I know you care about
Yeah. That's the beautiful thing about doing liberal radio, Bob. We actually do care about one another. We're not what's in it for me. We're not free marketers or any of that kind of crap. But one thing we do have to do, Bob, we got to get out of here.
I know that, but
all right.
You know what the dangest thing is?
What's that?
The other night you said, I love you, son. And you, I said, I love you much. And you said, I love you too.
And we do.
I honestly believe you do.
I do.
Middle of my core.
The little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Baptist Church did a good job.
Agnes.
Yeah, Bob.
Agnes.
Yes.
Don't hit him with a frying pan.
Okay, but I gotta go.
Later, huh? Bob. She said she's gotta go.
Oh.
Later.
Okay. Bye. Bye. I love you much.
Love you.
I love you, brother.
Agnes, do not hit him with a frying pan. My mother killed a man with one.
Okay.
All right, we're out of
here.
Seriously,
bye-bye.
Bye now. This port thing. Now, I know there's some right-wingers out there having kittens with crocheted tails over it. Can you get on board with a bunch of wing nuts? I don't know. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have all of this injustice in society, and why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid? My fondest memory of music class is kind of just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted really long time, at least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Alrighty. 9 minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On, and this is a tough nut to crack, at least as far as I'm concerned. I don't like the ports business. I simply don't like it. It smells. It seems like bad business to me. However, I am very strong in my convictions, and I absolutely will not get on board with a bunch of right-wing freaks on this one. We'll fight our own fight. We'll make our objections known for our own reasons. But I'm not going to get on board with a bunch of right-wing freaks. And I know the freaks are heavy. I saw somebody mentioning in the Tom Hartman chat room that Michael Savage was on this. You know, it's people like the American Family Association and Michael the Savage Wiener that make me wonder if this is an issue for me. Because if these guys are ostensibly making a lot of the same, are arguing from the same position as me, that makes me wonder if my position is right, because they are patently wrong. I mean, they get up in the morning and they're wrong. They go to bed at night and they're wrong. There is nothing right about, there is nothing correct about them. I mean, we call them the right wing hells. They're the wrong wing, okay? I'm very serious about that. I would not reach across the aisle to the Savage Wiener if my life depended on it. Because, you see, every time that the left does that, every time we extend the olive branch, we draw back a bloody stump. And I would hope that there was a lesson to be learned in the whole business over George Bush's little domestic spying program. Oh, Arlen Specter ran out and said, "Oh, we're going to have us some Senate hearings. Woo boy, we're going to get after this. Can't have spying on American citizens. No, siree. Mm-mm. Can't have that. No. Lord, no." Calls Alberto Gonzalez up to testify and says, "You know, I don't think it's necessary to put Bertie under oath. I mean, do we really have to? I mean, we're all friends here. He doesn't have to be under oath, does he?" Because between the time when he had said he wanted hearings on this issue and the time when the hearings actually took place, Karl Rove picked up the phone and made a call. And he said, "If you challenge George Bush on this domestic spying, there will be no cooperation for any senator who does so. From the White House, we will hang you out to dry. Do you understand?" Lindsey Graham. Oh, he's trying to be a statesman. You know, he took over Ernest Hollings' seat in South Carolina. Good Democrat for the most part, Ernest Hollings. Kind of conservative, but, you know, we could tolerate him. And, you know, he's trying to be statesmanlike, and, "Oh, I'm very troubled, I'm troubled, I'm terribly troubled by this domestic spying issue. It's bothersome to me that we should so assault the Constitution." Now, what's that, Mr. Rove? "Oh, Marse Rove, you mean you, oh my God, it's fine by me." And so we get this this story last week about how the and it's still unfolding. The Senate Intelligence Committee is absolutely disinterested in any spying domestic spying hearings. Pat Roberts has said, "Nah, ain't gonna happen. Just not gonna happen. We're not gonna do it. No need for it." Bill Frist, the cat killer, comes out today, and he says, we don't need any new laws to deal with this domestic spying thing. I mean, and you know, he's right. They're already ignoring FISA. Why do we need to create a second law for them to ignore?" So, on this ports issue, let me just point out, I'll go out on a limb on this one. As soon as the phone call comes from Karl Rove's office, all of Tom Coburn, my aching back. Tom Coburn will turn turtle in a minute when Karl Rove says, "Not going to be any cooperation from the White House there for you, Tommy boy." Well, look at our... I was mistaken. Look at that. It's our good friends, the Dubaiites. Dubians. Dubians. Whatever. They are good friends. They're going to do a great job running our ports. And they will sell out our side like that. Don't you think for a blessed minute that they won't? We have a friend here in West Virginia who speaks of people like Tom Coburn and these turncoat... Republicans says he says I wouldn't trust them in an outhouse with a muzzle on. And you know what? That is Lindsey Graham to a T. That's Tom Coburn to a T. That's Sam Brownback to a T. Wouldn't trust them in an outhouse with a muzzle on. Jeff Sessions. Wouldn't trust him in an outhouse with a muzzle on. So please understand, as you look at this issue of the sale of the operations of these ports, please understand that there are plenty of good reasons to oppose them, and we can oppose them all by ourselves. But when the right-wingers say, "Hey, here's one we can get together on," no. We'll oppose it, you oppose it. And when your politicians turn tail and run when they get threatened by Karl Rove, we will still be standing and we will know you for the damned, worthless, useless, yellow cowards that you are. All George Bush has to do is pick up the phone and call Reverend Donald Wildman and tell him that, we need this deal with Dubai, and Jesus told him to make this deal with Dubai. And you know what Reverend Donald Wildman will do? Oh, Jesus told you, George? Well, hallelujah! And he'll turn tail and run like the yellow coward that he is, and take all of his millions of acolyte followers with him. And at the end of the day, we will still be standing. And we will be opposing this for the right reasons. Not because of some racist hate for people with skin not sufficiently white as the Republican parties. Not for religious reasons. But for reasons entirely separate and different. I tell you what, we got to take a break. We got a couple of people on hold. Please stay with us through the break. We will go right to the phones when we come back. This, of course, is head on. And that's why we talk about these issues the way that we do. It's the only way I know to approach things. And, we will make it or break it that way. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'll tell you that. But if I didn't say it, well, I'd still have felt it. Where's the sense in that? I promise I'm not trying to make your life harder. I'll return to where we were. But I will go down with it.
the president came out and talked about the Iraq war and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Bye.
your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's do another hour. What do you say? I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your nightly confrontation with the facts. And the phone number, of course, you know, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. That's the way you get hold of the Head On Radio Network. Get on the horn. Use the phone. Okay, let's do go to the phones. Art in Eugene, Oregon, a first-time caller. Hey, Art, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good, you?
Well, not too bad. Sounds like you need a hug and that you're running into a little bit of a problem of, like, banging your head against the wall.
Yeah, sometimes, I think.
Yeah, I think it's been going on since the administration first came into office. And I got a cure for you.
Okay.
On Good Friday the 14th,
mm-hmm.
We've been chatting about a little bit online here in the chat room. And we can't really have an organized get-together because then you have to go permits and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But if you remember the movie The Birds?
Oh, yes.
Remember where the crows came up onto the monkey bars?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just started gathering?
I think
well,
I know where you're going,
you
Art.
On Good Friday is everybody who listens and everybody who knows anybody talks to somebody. And at 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific, we just all of a sudden start gathering at all the federal buildings in their towns. And we don't really say anything. We just sit there quietly. And it becomes a silent protest, something like what Gandhi would do.
Yeah.
There's no speakers, because if you have speakers, that means that person's in charge.
And that means that something's been organized.
Exactly. It has to be unorganized.
Yeah, I just thought I'd take a walk. Yeah,
unorganized. Just event.
Yeah, well, you know, that sort of appeals to my little anarchic streak, too.
And you can almost call it like the Mythical People's March.
Yeah.
Because we don't exist.
Yeah, we're
We've
mythical.
Been lost.
Yeah, we're mythical.
We no
people.
Longer have any voice. I'll admit there are a few congressmen, maybe a senator or two there, that want to do something. But they're locked away. Their voice isn't heard.
They're in the ghetto with us.
Exactly. And until we, the mythical people, jump out there and just sit and scare the living, you know what,
mm-hmm.
out of those people up there and say, we're tired of this.
Yeah, bring a few sandwiches, a little picnic basket,
yeah.
You know, just because, you know, federal courthouses, federal buildings, those are public spaces.
Exactly. I mean, you can even go to the media centers.
Yeah.
God knows they've been really helpful lately, haven't they? And
yeah.
Just sit in their lobby. It may be a little disruptive, but as long as there's no violence, the message will get out. And then people will see that, hopefully, and say, wow, there is somebody out there that wants to make a difference. Because I don't think we may have some 06 midterm elections the way this country is going. I've listened and talked to some of my people that I know
mm-hmm.
that are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And you talk about how the country is now to how it was when they were growing up, and you can see the tears filling their eyes.
I see it all the time with my dad, Art.
Yeah, I see it with mine. Mine's almost 80. And he looks back, and the tears aren't there for me, per se, but they are for his grandkids.
Yeah.
Because they have no future. And I think, you know, I'm near 50. And I remember the getting pepper sprayed at the University of Oregon campus during 69. And I think it's time we have to do it again. And just sit and stare at them.
I got a question for you, Art.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good committed mythical people, as you like to call them.
Yes.
Can we affect change without the stay-at-homes?
That's the hard part. We have to convince the stay-at-homes that their lifestyle as they know it now will no longer exist. You know, it's one of those things where we have no choice. We have to get them involved. And if we can't, we've still got to go. We still got to do what we have to do. And if we fail, then we fail trying. Because if we don't try, we fail before we even begin.
There's
and so it's got to start
somewhere. A lot of truth in what you say.
It's got to start somewhere, and I read the chat rooms, I read the blogs, and I see all these people out there frustrated. And I know the message can get out there through the blogs, through the chat rooms, through the call-in shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it has to go. It has to get out there. The message has to get out there that we need to stand up, and we need to stand up now. Because if we don't, everything that our forefathers fought for is out the window.
It's gone.
Every freedom that we think we have now is gone. Every right that we thought we had is gone. And where do you go from there?
Well, once you give them this good scare on Good Friday, ooh, now there's a theme. Good scare on Good Friday.
Oh, I like that.
Once you do this, assuming success. Once you scare these, and let's use the word that I mean, we know what we're dealing with, Art.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with fascists.
Exactly.
What is the typical response? What is the typical fascist response to instilling fear in them?
Well, I can guarantee you, they'll come down jackboot hard. They won't take it. They won't like it. They'll ignore it as best as possible. If it means going back again and again and again.
So that means if a few people are going to go and sit and have a picnic on the federal building lawn or what have you, that means that somebody has to stay at home to go make bail.
Maybe for a few. The more that arrive, the less they can do. You know, there's power in numbers. If there's only a few, they're never seen, they're never heard, they disappear. The larger the crowds, the larger the numbers, there's not a lot they can do.
Yeah, and
you put 10,000 people out in front of the Capitol building, maybe 15,000 out in front of the White House. I don't see the police and/or security guards really being able to do a lot, considering all they're doing is having a picnic for about a half hour, 45 minutes. Maybe screaming occasionally accountability or something to that effect.
Yeah, Bush must go.
Yeah, but it's got to be peaceful. And they can't stop you for sitting there 15 minutes.
Utterly passive, utterly nonviolent.
Exactly.
Well, I hope you will. I like this idea, Art.
You've got to look at it as, what would John Lennon do? What would Gandhi do? What would Martin Luther King do? What would Robert Kennedy do? You have to look at it that aspect of it. And nonviolence is sometimes, and silence is sometimes the most deafening sound. If you've ever had your wife get pissed at you,
mm-hmm.
and she just looks at you with those really mean-looking eyes and turns.
Yeah, that's the honey, what's wrong? Nothing.
Oh, nothing, yes. And you just kind of like shake there in your shoes going, I've done something bad.
I've screwed up.
Yeah, you're going for flowers and chocolates real fast.
And when you get back, you just open the door and fling them in and stay outside.
Exactly.
I know exactly
that's how we have to look at it.
I hope you will spread this around. I mean, you talk about going to the blogs and whatnot in
the
chat rooms.
I've slammed it on a couple blogs, and I've been putting it up on a couple chat rooms here and there, hoping it might get out there. And I'm going to be calling my local radio stations trying to get it out there, and that's the only way we can do it.
Let Bart Kopp know, Art.
What's that?
Let Bart Kopp know. BartKopp.com.
I think I will.
He's got a huge readership. Let the gang Wally and Clyde and Dookie know at.
Well, I'm sure with all the chat room people and all the people that are listening to your show, they know people. They can go out and do the same thing.
WD40.com, BuzzFlash. There is a way to get this out there. And the thing, I mean, you know, the other group that's on in this same time slot, let the Young Turks know.
Yeah, and MoveOn.org and.
Yeah.
All those people, just get the message out there on those blogs.
Yeah, nobody's got to organize anything, you know, just go. Just go. Do it easy. I mean, this is the easy way.
It is. Oh, I'm seeing my name is coming up in the chat room. That's a good thing to see. Okay.
Hey, Art, you take it easy.
Get my dog outside and take my nephew home.
Okay, well, thanks so much for the call. I hope we'll hear from you again.
Oh, you will, Bob. I'm enjoying the heck out of this.
Okay, take care.
Right. Bye
now. And let's see, let's roll on to David. David in Nashville. Whoever you were that was calling in, please call in again. Agnes didn't mean to hang up on you. David, hey, how you doing?
What, But I did call in again. All right, wait a second. Before Art goes out the door, and Bob, we're going to talk about ports and we're going to talk about history, but first it's me and Art.
Okay.
Art, two of the best years of my life were spent on West 7th in an upstairs apartment between Charlton and Mill, walking distance to the Herb Memorial, where the Talking Heads played one of the greatest shows on the history of planet Earth in 1980. And, Art, I say this with complete love and affirmation. If any city in America could start something that matters based on disorganization, by God, it's Eugene, Oregon. So, hats off to you, Art.
Good deal. Good deal.
Now then, Bob, we're going to play history quiz.
Okay.
I'm going to describe an event, and you're going to tell me what it is.
All righty.
America, with great force of arms, topples what they say is an evil man. There's a time period and the man is captured. The country of his origin captures him. America, having branded him as an evil man, wants him to be put on trial for war crimes of great, great extension. He's put on trial, and the trial degenerates into something less than a trial. What's the event, Bob?
And you know, this could be two or three things. this could be Mexico. This could be Yugoslavia. Am I still missing it?
You're still missing it.
You're going to have to help me then.
Well, it's not Saddam Hussein.
No, I mean, that seemed too obvious.
It's what the rest of the world did once von Hindenburg had lost the First World War. Germany had an election. He was put on trial in Leipzig. He made one speech, walked out of the courthouse, and was never touched again and enjoyed the rest of his life until he was elected president, only to turn over the reins of power to Hitler. And I see this trial and this mockery of justice and this foolishness and this disorganization. And Lord only knows what those people are going to do with it. 2,500 of ours and 100,000 of theirs and 25,000 of ours crippled. And the biggest thing we have to show for it is Saddam Hussein in his pajamas saying, I don't feel like doing a trial today.
Not today. Not today.
And America's not really picking up on the fact that after we were lied to about weapons and atoms and yellow cake and
sarin gas and ricin and
exactly. And London's only 45 minutes away from having a scud go, you know, I still
laugh about those damn scuds, David, you know, because I've had more accurate bottle rockets.
They're more dangerous to the poor guy that has to set it off than the target.
Yeah.
Now then, let's move on to the port.
Okay.
Let's move on to the port. Never mind why any right-wing nut opposes this. Please think about this as a point of view. If you're a country and you want to protect yourself, even though you're a world power, depending on trade, like, say, Japan, can you imagine the Japanese handing over for profit the control of their ports?
That's kind of where I was going, David.
There's a country that has never had within their boundaries what they needed to live their life since the inception of living humans on that bunch of rocky stuff. And they know what it is to be a world trading, world military. Yes, they've made some bad decisions. Yes, they've picked some wrong fights here and there. But they would never hand control of their ports over. Now then, one more thing, and then it's your turn. The French and the British, we initially sold the control of those ports to the British.
Yes.
But weren't the British in league with the French and mad at the French and league with the French, mad at the French? Don't allegiances move around a little bit, Bob?
They're a little bit.
Isn't that a little like stacking marbles? I mean, like 50 years down the road, can we really say if it was just England? To hell with the fact that England sold it to the Arab Emirates. Why the hell were we selling it to anybody?
That's the, yeah. How did this happen? And I don't, I honest to God, David, I don't know the background on it.
Greed, profit, we don't want to be bothered.
But this smacks of that whole free market dynamic garbage that we hear so much from the neocons. So I have a hard time believing, and I could be proven wrong, I have a hard time believing that this was something done by Bill Clinton, although we all know that everything is Bill Clinton's fault.
Well, if it did happen on his watch, even to the British, I'm making it all over again. Not for the stained blue dress, but for the fact that he was Mr. Triangulation, Mr. Democrat Light, Mr. 7 out of 10 of Newt, Gingrich's, you know, important points on how to screw America, and Clinton achieved 7 of them. But at least he was a Democrat, and he didn't do some of the things that are being done now. I could get mad at him, and if he did it, I'd be mad at him for giving Bush the chance to let it happen all over again, but in a worse form.
Well, but I smell his daddy or Reagan somewhere in this deal.
It would seem more like them. You know, can you imagine George the First saying to the Iron Witch from Hell with the hair that wouldn't bend in a wind, Maggie, how about the ports? You want a few of the ports? Here, let me lay a few ports up. Get in bed with this conservative thing. Just kidding, honey. Just kidding. You know, come on board with this conservative thing and really, really pump me up around the world, and we'll give you a few ports as a payback.
That, yeah, see, I can buy that.
Yeah, you bet you can. So can I. But no country sells its ports or the running of them.
You know, I can't imagine, that's what makes me so paranoid about this being the front end of another 9/11 operation, because there, I know that, David, I know that the Bushes are just awash in greed and avarice on a universal scale. I understand that completely, but even so, the port of Baltimore? You know, the radiation from a dirty bomb in Baltimore could reach D.C.
I'm sorry, 3 busloads of motivated individuals with AK-47s could reach D.C. from Baltimore.
Motivated individuals. And you got, yeah, they are that.
Well, yeah, what's to say that in those sea land containers, they're offloaded at the port of Baltimore.
Well, hey, they're good at we use them at the Kabul airport for storing human beings. Those sea land containers.
Precisely.
American troops stood by and watched while Northern Resistance fighters or whatever the heck they were, you know, our buddies, machine gunned people, those containers full of people. Because the Americans were complaining about them making noise, and they go, with the AK-40s, now they do not make noise. You happy?
The shells were still bouncing on the pavement, but the voices were quiet.
Yeah. I mean, so if they're good, you know, again, and it's a lesson that we teach the world, David. If it's good enough for us, it's good enough for them. Right?
You got it.
Oh, God.
Well,
I'm afraid of these people.
Let's you and I on a parallel track, several parallel tracks. Let's make noise about this. I'm not sure that the right wing nuts that you're speaking about, I'm not sure they've got enough sense to really oppose this on anything other than
racist grounds.
Xenophobic racism. That's all they've got going for them. But I just look at, you just don't turn over your arteries and the openings, the doorway, the portals to your country to a foreigner, no matter what, whether he's friendly today.
That's the point here, David. I don't want to turn over the port of Baltimore to the Swiss, for God's sakes.
Thank you. You know, like I said, the French and the British, they've gotten along, they haven't. The Americans and the British, we haven't gotten along, we have gotten along. We've gotten along, whoops, we're not getting along now. You know, what's to say in 30 years, some way, somehow, there's a dominant wing that's Muslim that votes somebody into the British House of Lords, or House of Commons, it would never be the Lords, in the House of Commons, that creates something that cascades down that causes a problem. Had it stayed a British company.
Well, look, I mean, and I've had enough of this stuff, and that's what makes me think this is Republican, so-called conservatives, the garbage. Because when we write our little check for our water every month, for our water bill, we pay an organization called West Virginia American Water Company, David.
Headquartered in Denver.
Okay. Well, you know where Denver calls when they call HQ?
Oh, golly.
They call London.
Cha-ching, we have a winner.
And when London... No, wait, this is an onion. When London calls headquarters, they call Germany.
Wait a minute, I wasn't right about Denver, was I?
I don't know. West Virginia American Water is a wholly owned subsidiary of another organization called American Water. American Water answers to London, London answers to Germany, or perhaps vice versa. I'm buying my water. And, look, I love German cars, German toys, German chocolate.
Sure.
And I'm drinking German water in Fayette County, West Virginia. And I'm doing that because, in the great deregulation scheme, little public service districts aren't competent to deliver water to their neighbors. No, can't do that. So it gets sold off with the blessing of the Public Service Commission to the Germans, whom I like. But not that much.
And a very small number of savvy crooks, thieves, and investors, it's all the same word, there should be no punctuation, crooks, thieves, investors, made it happen, and it benefited probably between 100 to 125 people. And they made a buttload of dough. And you get to send your water bill to Germany.
Mm-hmm. And they're also notorious for being one of the most humongous industrial polluters, the mother company, the mothership.
Oh, boy.
One of the most humongous industrial polluters on planet Earth. So there's nothing new in this. Ports, you're amazed that we would sell the ports? We sold our water. Water. I don't know how many...
So much more basic, but, water for... Your part of the world versus six ports, that gets my attention a little bit more quickly.
I understand. But you would be surprised how many people throughout the eastern part of the United States are writing checks to to American Water. Whether it's Pennsylvania American, New York American, Tennessee American, Carolina American, they're all over the place. But this is emblematic, I guess, is what I'm saying, David. And frankly, the thing that I'm very serious about not getting in bed with the right wing to oppose this, oppose it on our own terms. But, if you went to Reverend Donald Wildman and told him that the chief emir or sheik or whatever it is of the United Arab Emirates had just become a holy roller, he'd be all for it.
Not necessarily, but if you told the Reverend Wildman that there was several million dollars at stake for Christian broadcasting within the United States, praise the Lord.
And pass the container ship.
You got it.
All right, David, we got to hit the break. Thanks so much for your thoughts. I always appreciate them.
Bob, thanks for the chance to, just be loud and obnoxious. I love getting my shot.
And you did indeed. You have a great night.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. Time for a quick break, a little cup of Joe, and we'll come back with more of your phone calls. Please stick with us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Come Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. I was scrounging around the underbelly of political chat rooms yesterday, and I wandered into a room that was having a rather spirited debate about Iraq. One of the protagonists, a typical right-wing slug, was demanding that his left-wing opponent tell him what the democratic plan was for Iraq. The left-wing guy, like it always seems with us, was trying to make a smart, decent point about U.S. policy and humanitarianism, etc., etc., and as always, was getting nowhere. And the reason for that is that it's a stupid argument to begin with. The war with Iraq is a production of the neoconservative division of the Republican Party, and they weren't interested in what Democrats or anyone else for that matter had to say about it. As soon as Mr. Bush took office, they had their sights set on Iraq as part of a plan to control the entire Middle East. And the Democrats, being a minority in the House and Senate, didn't really have a whole lot to say about it. Of course, I can't speak for the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm just a guy with a mic and an opinion, right? But I do have a good idea on how to deal with Iraq and clean up our own government at the same time. It's very simple, really. What we do is start drafting right-wing pundits and war bloggers, college Republicans, and Pat Robertson's list of donors. Also the families of every congressman and senator who voted for the war, Democrats included. It'd all be over in a week, and a lot of useless blowhards would be dead. Then we can at least have a serious discussion about what to do in Iraq. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Halfway through, it amazes me how that happens. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, well, rather than me sitting here yammering, let's go to the phones. Ben's been with us for quite a while. Ben calling from Illinois. Hey, Ben, you're Head On.
We have ways of making sure that you buy our German vodka, you know.
Well, we do, and you do not know, you do not wish to know what is the other's ways.
No, it would be best for you to just buy it and stumm, yeah?
Yeah, and, yeah. And do not complain about the cloudiness. The cloudiness is a good thing.
That was put there by my our good friends who make the Zyklon gas, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it wasn't good for you, we wouldn't be putting it there.
No. Anyway. Anyways, oh, I've already blogged that idea for the non-protest.
Right.
And I think the thing to say here is we need to emphasize to people that it would be much more frightening if they didn't shout anything.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
A thousand.
Perfect silence, like the tomb, like you were seeing the death of a great leader. Not a word. No yammer. No, hey, Joe, how's it going? No songs, no tambourines,
no kumbaya,
their flags. In fact, if you would dress in somber clothes, as befitting a funeral, that would be the best.
You know, a thousand silent people are terrifying.
A thousand silent people are terrifying. Now, I'm not sure. I didn't hear the whole discussion. Did you catch the significance of the hour?
No.
3 p.m. The hour Jesus died on the cross.
Wow.
3 is the hour of Jesus' death.
That's
now,
true.
As a Roman Catholic kid, having gone to Roman Catholic school, I've seen the Stations of the Cross about 36 times, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is drilled into my head. But that is the significance.
That's perfect. I got a little chill up my, you know, with the little hairs on the back of my neck.
Now, I'm suggesting the following thing to people. You can't organize a non-organized thing. If you organize the non-organized thing, you've got the organized thing.
Mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
What everybody who's going to participate in this needs to do is go to DU, go to the Bart Cop board, go to the Randy Rhodes board, go to whatever board you post on, and post something very much like the following. I know. Start your own topic. Don't join a topic from somebody else unless you feel like being a follower, all right? Just a brand new topic, even if there are 10 topics exactly like this topic, that says, I know where I will be Good Friday at 3 p.m. And in the body of it, say something like, the very hour Jesus died on the cross, I will be standing in perfect silence in the plaza in front of the federal building in then wherever you are. And post that topic every couple days, whether there's 1,000 other people posting that same topic every couple days. Keep posting that topic as a brand new goddamn topic every couple days, everywhere you go.
And there, you know, there's something else that arises out of this. By non-organizing this, Ben, it's an excellent opportunity to find out just how much our side of the fight is being surveilled.
Exactly.
Because if you show up and you sit down and you take out your little sandwich or whatever, then there's a bunch of guys. You know, we're so ticky-tacky now. The fascists, you know, they wear blue poplin trousers and blue T-shirts and ball caps. And if you see a lot of those guys, you know you were surveilled.
You know, I should just wear my little TSA cap, you know?
Yeah, that'd work.
Yeah, I'll go on to Cafe Press and steal the TSA logo and just sort of put it on a cap.
Oh, that's a beautiful thought. Or, you know, or maybe one of those Montgomery County, Maryland Homeland Security hats.
How about World Trade Center security?
Wow. Now, see, we can't overthink this. We can't overplan this because then it becomes a movement. We can't
that
have a movement.
It becomes a movement, right.
Can't have a movement.
You can't organize a non-organized thing.
Yeah. Dark clothing and sort of, you know.
And here's a message to our dear friends, the anarchists.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't show up without a rag over your face and without your bloody red flag, stay home.
Yeah, no flags, no signs, no kumbaya, no tambourines, banjos, honking horns, little tin drums, nothing. No peace feathers.
Right. None of that stuff, none of it is welcome. That is not the whole point. Well, of course, you can show up however you want, this being a non-organized thing, but I'm just saying that that isn't keeping in the spirit of what we're doing here at all.
Yeah, maybe you bring an extra sandwich.
Right.
To break bread with your neighbors.
Yeah, that would work. Bring a lunch.
Yeah. And have a seat. Nobody has to walk, nobody has to march, nobody has to get in the street, nobody has to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down. Sit down and, I mean, I hate to be rude, sit down and shut up.
Exactly right.
And you and by shutting up, and do not carry ID. You forgot your ID that morning.
They still can't make you do that, you know. They still can't make you carry your ID.
Actually, they can. Remember that Supreme Court case from a year or so ago?
No, I missed that one.
Yeah, the cops can walk. You don't even have to be a suspect now. The Supreme Court of the United States said that the cops can walk up and ask you your name, and you no longer have the right as an American citizen to ask them why they want to know. Your duty as an American citizen is to say, my name is.
Oh, I'll tell them my name. I just don't have to have any ID.
No. No, you do not have to have your papers, at least not yet. I like the thoughts of this, Ben.
So, I somehow think the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. would have approved of this idea.
I think he would have, yeah, I think he would have seen the genius of it.
You take care, my friend.
All right, you too. Get feeling better. I can tell from the sound of your voice you're a little less than on top of the weather.
Oh, yeah, I've been coughing my lungs out and ripping my vocal cords.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ben. I'm liking this idea more and more and more. Let's chat with David in Augusta, Maine. Hey, David, you head on.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the port situation, and the thing that came to mind to me is the convincing the Republicans and the theocrats and all of that. And two things came to mind, the revelation of two things from my childhood. One was Raiders of the Lost Ark and Old Yeller. And what that has to do with both of those things is in Raiders of the Lost Ark, remember when that swordsman is flashing all around? And
bang.
All of a sudden Indiana Jones takes out the gun, right? And then what really flashed in my mind as a child, because before that I couldn't see that. That was PG. So, you know, I had to wait a little. I mean, I had to wait till, you know, the video rental or whatever to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark. But before that was Old Yeller. And in Old Yeller, what they did when the dog had rabies is they shot him.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think we should do with a lot of these Republicans, now hear me out,
okay,
is we shoot them. Because if we shoot them all and whatnot, we're giving them what they want. They've got rabies. They fear us. And they'll be like, before they die, they'll be like, you know what? We were right. We were right. The liberals are crazy. So, in a way, it's genius. You're killing so many birds with one stone.
They're going to come and take me away with talk like that, David. I didn't say it. Guys, honest to God, I didn't. But no, you do raise a valid issue, especially the theocrats.
Right.
Their whole gig is to die. Because, I mean, that's when they fly up into the sky and on Jesus' little golden Eldorado, and they get the hot fudge sundae at the pearly gates and
that's
streets
it.
Paved with gold. And because all of this down here, this is no fun. They're waiting to go home.
They're all waiting to go home. And the problem with the port situation is this, the more dominoes are going to keep falling and falling, and pretty soon they're going to be like, well, see, the liberals aren't helping us out. And I don't know. I was listening to Tom Hartman today, and Tom Hartman raised a good point. He said, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, he said, but what if the Republicans were doing this on purpose to teeter-totter the whole economy and collapse it, but it collapses right when we take the Senate and the House?
Well, see, I said that a few nights ago, David, in regard to the possibility of a draft. All these guys, you know, couldn't you see them, you know, say long about sometime in 2008, the ultimate lame duck, George W. Bush, starts himself his little Iran war, and then lets it get to be just nasty enough that when, you know, and here's the fun part, maybe a Democrat wins the White House and comes in and has to start the draft.
It makes you wonder what to do. Do we vote Democrat or do I vote Republican?
Oh, I think you have to vote Democrat because another tool of the Bush family. No, we can't have that. And we understand that John McCain, you know, who is the front runner on the Republican ticket, he is and has shown himself time and again to be a tool of the Bush family.
I think part of the problem is that it just seems to be a relentless. I mean, I listen to people, the protests and whatnot, and you know, I just want to say that these types of protests, I think part of the problem is everyone has been conditioned to like the meetings where you have the cooler and the Cheetos and the Pepsis, and you just keep thinking and thinking, and when it actually comes to doing something, people just sit around and go, "Nah, that's not a good idea."
Well, but see, that's the beauty. That's the beauty of this, David. There's no thinking involved.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, bring a sandwich, bottle of water, sit down, and shut up.
I have an idea to add on to it, but
okay,
it's a different idea. Remember the scene in 2001 where they had the Ligeti score and the beginning and the people, they had those dissonant voices rising like,
yeah.
That's what you could do outside the courthouse.
But I mean, the thing is, you know, I really, you know, I hope this idea can get a little bit of traction.
Uh-huh.
But then I hope I'm kind of where Ben is. No tambourines, no singing kumbaya, no we shall overcome. Silence, dead silence, as silent as the people this administration has slaughtered, David.
That's one idea. I think another idea would be to. I think we're getting there, Bob, and I think it's only a matter of time before someone says, "What if we do this?" I think we're going to start falling into the Rovian fear-mongering on our side, where we start having people developing these nefarious-type tactics because it'll think it'll place us in power. And maybe it will place us in power, but it will be like, we'll be in like an... Like Devo says, a devolution.
Yeah, but see, for me, it's not, I mean, I am the last guy in the world to engage in a power trip, David. Honest to God, I am. I don't want it. I don't like it.
I know.
I want to stop things. I'm not trying, you know.
Right.
I'm far more interested in stopping evil than starting good, because you can start good all day long, but if evil is still cruising... Your good's gonna get whacked.
I have something to add. Talking about the senators and the congressmen,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be really interesting experiment if we took some of the senators who don't get back to us, don't respond to us, to just like have somebody post their phone number on the message board or whatever, just some place on blogs or whatever, and just have a bunch of people call them and tell them how they really feel about their senator. At home, because it seems to me, if you're going to put yourself and we pay your salary and whatnot, I should be able to call you at home. Am I correct?
Well, God knows during the election season, they don't hesitate to call us at home, do they?
That's right. That's right. And I don't think they could argue. I mean, they would just be
Yeah, I'm in the middle of doling out the mashed potatoes, made the little dent, got the gravy ladle thing pouring the brown grit, the phone ring. Hi, this is Congressman so-and-so's office. We'd like to...
That's right. They don't even call you anymore. They just leave the automated message.
Right. Because those are tougher to...
leaving an automated message.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a plan right there.
Well, I think that there's lots of plans, David. We got it, but we've got to talk about them. We've got to create them, and if people sit around waiting for movements, it ain't going to happen. It is not going to happen. You know, if one person sits down on the federal courthouse lawn in Charleston, West Virginia, or Augusta, Maine,
yeah.
If one person does it, that's what matters. You know, if one person is doing it and somebody sits down beside him, well, I don't mean to make light of anything, but this is the exact model out of Arlo Guthrie's little rant in Alice's Restaurant. You know, if one person does it, he's crazy. If two people do it, it's a cult. If three people do it, it's a movement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, did you check on that Eco Village post I sent you?
Yes, I did.
What do you think of that place?
Oh, God, it's fascinating.
It's amazing that they built that place in 6 years. I don't know how the structure in the community works. I think the car thing is funny. The car, they say, they have the rules on the car that's there.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Well, you know, but you know, that's the one thing. Anytime you form something like that, you're gonna have one rule-oriented SOB who wants to ruin it for everybody. David, great to hear from you, and I hope we will again.
Just probably next week, Bob.
Yeah, keep brainstorming, keep thinking, okay?
All right.
All right.
Those copies of Old Yeller out.
Exactly. Later okay. Now. Bye. And let's see, Chris in Alabama. Hey, Chris, you're head on.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
I was telling Agnes I hadn't been feeling that great, so I hadn't been calling in here lately.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, me too. Trust me. I noticed an article on Drudge, you know, let's don't even dispense what he is.
Yeah, right-wing sewer. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. A report coming from the BBC about Mississippi. Now, that in itself...
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Mississippi is going to talk about... They're talking about putting pictures of child molesters, sex offenders, on billboards along the highway.
Beautiful.
And the people that are already serving. So the ACLU says it's just a waste of money. It's a waste of everything. Why do it if they're already serving? My point is, if they change that, and they were to put up those that are suspected of, wouldn't the Democrats have to rail about equal time?
Yeah, because your average child molester is, of course, a Republican.
Is, of course, a Republican. I'm not saying they're in office. I'm just saying we don't know if they're in office.
You're twisted. You know that?
I'm not twisted. Well, okay, I am. But
yeah, don't try to hide it.
Don't try to hide it. Hey, how many times since today.
Yeah.
Every time you hear this stuff come out.
It's out of a church.
It's out of a church. It's out of a youth group. It's out of this, out of that.
Yeah, and it's some upstanding conservative that's doing it. Because, and it's because they live a fundamentally
repressed life.
Yeah. You know, they're not free to be who they are. All these, you know, whether it's Ken Melman or David Dreyer, all of these, you know, all these log closet Republicans out there, not free to be themselves. If they weren't such hateful bastards, I'd feel sorry for them, Chris.
You're absolutely right.
I want, you know, I'm a crazy liberal. You know, I want people to be who they are.
Osama has said he will never be caught alive, which means I guess he's not going hunting with it, can he? And like I wrote...
The best part of that, though, was what I saw a screen capture today from MSNBC, Chris. Did you run across this one?
Tell me.
It's a link to the Osama story, but on the main page, and I guess it's been scrubbed or pulled or something since then, but on the main page it says, Biden, I'll never be captured alive.
Oh, my God. You know, they say they can do... You saw the Mission Impossible that kept pulling their face off?
Yeah, oh, yeah, the rubber mask.
And you remember what I wrote about Biden outside the window.
Yeah.
Well,
I remember, yeah. Was it Robin Williams that had the bit a long time ago about Ronald Reagan where he finally pulls the rubber mask off and it's Nixon? I'm back.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say something else, but since you brought him up... Biden, my goodness gracious, love. How?
Yeah, referred to Hillary as a far left Democrat.
There is a documentary coming out which I cannot wait to see. It's called, oh my God, I had it in my head, and I just forgot the name. It's about Al Gore and him, his travels, discussing global warming with scientists, and talking about how many scientists he has talked to. And how many of them have been threatened with loss of job, loss of this, loss of that, because they've been speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm. You mean mentioning the fact of the drowning polar bears and the no ice cap? And
yeah. Now, all these Democrats are saying, you know, Hillary's got to run, Hillary's got to run. Now, look, why not go with a winner? Al's already won once.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any reason to think that he won't run.
Yeah, except for the fact that he says he won't.
Everybody says that.
Yeah, but if Al Gore says it, he's a serial liar. Don't you remember all that, Chris? He said he was the inspiration behind Love Story. He said he invented the Internet. My friend Al Gore is a serial liar. He's a pathological liar.
Well,
he is incapable of telling the truth.
They tried all that BS before, and he still won.
Yeah.
That's who I want. That's who I want.
There's a lot of people out there leaning toward Al, and I would certainly prefer Al to Hillary. I mean,
An Unfortunate Truth. That's the name of the documentary.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I mentioned this just on the way out of the show Friday night, but this petition drive, and this comes from my right-wing PR think tank. See, that's a joke. Petition to ban women from ballot. The U.S. Constitution prevents Hillary Rodham Clinton or any woman from serving as president. They are the Christians. The religion industry is circulating a petition right now to ban Hillary Clinton from the ballot because the pronoun he is used in the Constitution. And after all, they are strict constructionists. If the Constitution says he, it means he. It doesn't mean she.
Well, I've been away from the show for a little while, so I'm sure you did quite a bit on Paul Hackett.
I'm about Hacketed to death. I feel like there's something wrong, Chris, and I don't know what it is. I see now that he's on the board of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Good for him. But if he was this gung ho fighter, I want to know why he didn't go ahead and file and run for the Democratic primary.
Absolutely, there's got to be. And now I'm only guessing here, but I am thinking that there has got to be some kind of action or a shot heard around the world in Iraq that may come back to haunt him.
I can't see that happening. I mean, after all, he was a PR guy. I mean, it's not like he was a major out there in charge of a of a of a
You don't have, you don't
rifle
have to,
company.
You don't have to pull the trigger to have to show evidence that you fired a gun,
or to have your picture taken with the little dude with the bag on his head.
Yeah,
that's speculation.
There has got to be something.
Well,
I mean, this isn't Wellstone. This is anything like that.
No, and Paul Hackett was no Wellstone. Paul Hackett was no Wellstone.
No. He was an untested.
People
didn't think about that.
Here's. I don't know. I smell some sort of Rovian dirty tricks in this, Chris.
I want that to be what it is.
Well, I think the right wingers desperately wanted Hackett to run because they knew that they could smear him and stomp him and make a general mess of him in the general election. They're not going to be able to pull that with Sherrod Brown.
It's already been proven that what right-wingers want, they can get done in the Democratic Party.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's been proven
time and time again.
They got rid of Howard Dean and picked John Kerry for us.
Yeah, so if they're, this stinks. It really stinks.
Yeah.
I
don't dislike Paul Hackett.
I don't either. I think his ideas are great.
And I like the fact that he was
very well.
His willingness to stand up to the religion industry freaks in Ohio. I was, you go, Paul. But the fact of the matter was, you know, 2 days or 3 days or whatever it was before the filing deadline, and so what if you've only got a quarter of a million and Sherrod Brown's got 1.3? Get out there, get in the fight. You know, if your ideas are better, you've got a chance of winning.
This isn't throwing a Democratic landmine slaughter in Orange County, California.
No.
This is something else. Obviously.
No, this is sort of a march through the Diebold swamp that is Ohio. Chris, we got to get out of here. We got a breakup on top of us.
Well, Bob,
I hope you get to feeling better, brother, and I hope we'll hear from you again.
I'm going to open MRI Thursday, so we'll just wait and see.
Well, please share the details with us. We'll all be thinking about you and sending good vibes, good juju, good energy. Some people will be praying. I'll bet you.
Love to you and the family, buddy.
And you and yours.
All right.
Take care. All right, and let's see, a quick trip into the wonderful world of public service announcements and promotions, a little bit of music, then we'll come back and start hour number 3. This is Head On. You know me. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. With all your faults, I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't smile.
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll, supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at 3 times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Oh, boy. When the what did Dr. Thompson say? When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. We're going to go back to the phones here just in a second. I want to have a run at the United States of Appalachia comments. I think that's really, you're really going to find that quite interesting. And you remember Randall Terry, Operation Rescue, the guy that inspired the murder of Barnett Schlepian and the Centennial Park bombing at the Atlanta Olympics, right? Okay.
Supposedly,
allegedly. Okay, sure. The guy that got chased out of his own organization by the National Organization for Women. I got to tell you about this. But let's go to the phones. I hate to keep people waiting. You know that. Rick is with us from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, go ahead. Read it.
No. Let's talk.
Okay. Well, I mean, it just, you know.
Okay. Suffice to say, I get this right-wing PR stuff in my email box all day.
Oh, yeah, you're on the talking points list.
So I got one today from Randall Terry. And you know who Randall Terry is, right?
Oh, yes, I do.
He was part of the crowd, the Operation Rescue crowd that tortured women outside of abortion clinics, women's health centers.
Yeah, didn't he show up over there at the thing with the Shrivel girl?
Yeah, he became the spokesman for the girl with the vegetable brain.
A creep in the fifth power.
Yeah, right. Well, now he set himself up as an expert on Islam.
I saw that.
So Rick, I get this. It's okay if I waste your time like this?
Sure, go ahead.
I get this message from him today explaining how we don't, and this part of his thesis is true. We don't know diddly about Islam. Really, we don't. You know, we talk about things like moderate Islam. Or a Presbyterian. See, we think the difference between Sunni and Shia and the Wahhabis and stuff is like the difference between Presbyterians and Lutherans and Methodists. It's not. It's not at all. He's talking about this whole cartoon controversy, and I think it misses the point because, you know, this is a conservative rag in Denmark that started this thing, that deliberately published these, you know, to take their little index finger, poke it in the Muslim's eye, you know?
It's akin to Sharon's little walk down to the holy place to start the infittata.
Right, and, if you want to get a cultural handle on it, Rick, it's the same thing, if some conservative rag, say the Washington Times, did an editorial cartoon showing Barack Obama eating watermelon.
Right.
Okay? There are some things that it's not that you don't have the freedom to do it. In polite society, you don't do it. It's just not nice.
Well, I mean, and it's even worse because there's something to do with, you're not even supposed to show his image in any form.
According to some traditions. But he goes on at length about all of this. And I'm a smart ass. So I wrote back.
And you said?
I said, "Dear Mr. Terry, I couldn't agree more. True spirituality is always perverted when ordinary people..." Because he's complaining about the hadiths and the sunnah, which are the deeds and the sayings of Muhammad that aren't in the Quran. Stuff that came later, sort of, you know, made up as they went along, at least in mind. But you know how I feel about religion.
Sure.
I couldn't agree more. True spirituality is always perverted when ordinary people try to interpret and create doctrine from the life of a holy man or prophet. The Sunnah and Haditha are perversions of the life of Muhammad cast in terms convenient to their expositors, much as are the perverted maunderings of Saul of Tarsus. What a shame you're a terrorist yourself, Mr. Terry. Otherwise, you might have some relevance. I wonder, do you ever beg the Almighty's forgiveness for your role in the murder of Dr. Schlepian, or do you just wait for that day when you will be cut off from the mercy of Yeshua? Thanks for the note. I'll be printing it and comparing your religious zealotry with that of the Muslims on tonight's edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. Feel free to tune in. And gave the address, yours in Christ, Bob Kincaid. He wrote back!
No kidding.
He wrote back!
Oh, this is going to be good. Did you know that you could be saved for just $29.95, son?
No, that's the weird thing. Hi, Bob. Perhaps we should talk sometime off the air if you wish, or on the air. Whatever you think that I did to that doctor is not true, and any quotes you think you have are also probably erroneous. I've had a long public life with many things said about me that are not true. But since you're a public person as well, I'm sure you can at least appreciate the dilemma that goes with the territory. Oh, well, didn't I do your show on more than one occasion? No. Anyway, I wish you well in all the good things you do. I'd like you to see some of my research on Islam. Please feel free to yada, yada, yada website. You can also see my musings on America's political history and theology.
Well, that, you know, and that just, that's...
That blew my mind.
That, no, it's just, it's typical for that guy, because he will do, he is what's known as a media pig. And he'll do anything to get FaceTime or VoiceTime, anything, because it always comes down to the same thing. He's always looking for more followers to generate more cash. I mean, his entire martyrdom, or near martyrdom, for all of these causes is all based on trying to keep a mansion running.
Well, do I sure? And but do I recall correctly, Rick? Eric Rudolph? Eric Rudolph, the Centennial Park bomber.
Yeah.
The guy that, you know, bombed an abortion clinic, all that stuff. Wasn't he a follower of Operation Rescue?
I am certain that he was.
And the guy who sniped the doctor through the window, wasn't he a follower
yes, he
of
was.
Operation Rescue?
Yes, he was.
And wasn't Operation Rescue founded and run by Randall Terry?
I believe it was, and they were. I think they were darn near. Weren't they sued out of existence, or they?
It was really ugly dishonesty, Rick. The National Organization for Women, I think, was who sued them.
Well,
and they won,
there was some kind of civil thing.
And they settled, and they got a judgment. And part of that judgment was that Randall Terry was never to have anything whatsoever to do with Operation Rescue ever, ever, ever again. And they confessed judgment. And then, instead of having to pay the National Organization for Women, what did they do? They went bankrupt.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah, I remember the article. I remember reading about it. But I seem to remember that there was some kind of ruling that put some of those Operation Rescue guys in jail, if I remember correctly. And if it is the same group, it's going back a ways, but they used the RICO Act on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
I think that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
And you know
who defended them?
Who?
The American Civil Liberties Union.
Oh, yes, they did. Well, they're good like that. I mean, if they think you got a right to do something and say something or whatever.
Yeah, they're not gonna ask you what your philosophy is. They're just going to ask you if you got some civil liberty. Yeah. But that won't stop the Savage Wiener or, you know, Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, they did Limbaugh. I was just going to say that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that only proves the integrity of the organization, in my opinion. I mean, I've never seen a group get such a bad rap that is so undeserving as the ACLU. I cannot stand the way they beat them up, when they, the kind of work that they do, for Pete's sakes. I mean, like Larry Flint. You can disagree with the way he makes his living, although it seems to me he's a multimillionaire, and I think a lot of those guys that disagree really dig what he does. But the point is, who's worked harder for the First Amendment?
Well, precisely, and the fact of the matter is, it also goes unsaid, Rick, that if I had the power, you know, the genie comes down, grants me the wish, and I get to pull the plug on all right-wing radio across the United States, you know who's going to have my butt in court? The ACLU.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I'm just wondering, like, I don't know what kind of calls you got, because I got in late because I had to take care of some business, but, I mean, have you been listening to what's going on in sleeper zones and all these other places?
About which? I mean, I walk in there, take a look at Freeperville, and then I got to go take a shower.
I know. Yeah. Well, basically, there's so many people. I mean, they are bugging. Yeah, the port thing is like the tipping point. Forget the murderous fake wars. Forget all the lies. Forget everything that's happened.
Yeah, that's what I kind of led. Yeah, you said you got in late. I led the show with that.
Oh, did you?
I'll tell you like I told the audience. I'm conflicted and confused by it, because I'm opposed to it too. But I'm opposed to it because I don't think you sell Baltimore to anybody. It's America.
Well, you got to go all the way back when they started. We got off of a value-added economy, and then we got off the gold standard, and then the full faith and credit of the United States became our asset.
Yeah.
And so they've been doing this with Alaskan oil, and they did it with buildings right in downtown Manhattan. And this has been going on for some time, but now, where it's just, they're doing such large things. that the people is hitting the mainstream news. Before, it just didn't make it, and if you brought it up to somebody, they'd look at you like you were crazy.
Well, the freepers are losing their mind about it. You know, the hardcore neocons are losing their minds about it. And what I led with, the American Family Association, led by the Reverend Donald Wildman, he's losing his mind about it.
I mean, last week it was, what's his name, Dick Morris, the pillow talker?
Oh, yeah, the toe sucker?
Yeah, he was, now he was driving old, what's his name, crazy there, Sean Hannity, with talking about the indefensible, ridiculous stupidity of the vice president. And now we got this, and I just think that the Republicans are falling out of the spell like dominoes.
Well, on the one hand, I like to think that they are coming unglued.
They are. They absolutely are. I'm telling you, this isn't even an organized effort. It's just, I was listening to C-SPAN. I went into the Freeperville. I've been listening to all types of talk radio, shortwave, everything I can get. And these people are finally, they're just saying, I have had it. It's like they've been tolerating grit.
Yeah, but after, you got to listen, Rick, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but you got to listen past the I've had it part. Because time after time, I've heard a bunch of this too, and it's, I've had it. I thought George Bush was a conservative. He ain't no conservative.
Well, yeah, but I'm telling you, the tone is different. And that, you know, even though the spinners, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, all these guys, they are obligated to the lie. They can't retreat from it. And they're trying to make everything that happens sound so kosher and so normal, and everything's just fine. But they're at a point now with this ports deal where people can't get their mind around it. They can't find any good reason for it. I mean, 9/11 security. You know, we were hit on 9/11. They're going to.
I know, and you want to take one of these freaks and shake them and say, you damn dummy.
Well, yeah, but
this has been going on for a while.
They no longer can tolerate the price of their own agenda. That's what the Republicans are finding out. And I'm not talking about the freak out. I'm not talking about that 30% that are true dyed-in-the-wool SS. I'm not talking about them.
No, you're not talking about the dude with the sign that says Morans.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about the guy with that, or the guy with the stupid Confederate flag and all the other things up the street. I am talking about the people that have been willing to go along with this because of these other little private agendas. The anti-abortion, the anti-gay, some kind of tax relief or something else. But this one here is just ridiculous because they've been having to swallow all the nonsense about, you know, before it was the Russians are coming, and now it's the terrorists are coming, and this has been going on for years, and everyone was a fake attack. It never happened, and they've given up so much, and they bit their tongue, and they can't do it now because everything has been based on terrorism. The only thing Bush stands on is terrorism.
Well, let me ask
you. And now he's selling the ports to the terrorists.
Well, that's where, let me ask you a question, and I put this out there earlier. I got a pretty good response on this. You know, where there's a lot of people out there, you know, like the loose change video you sent me, and it was fascinating to watch. There's a lot of people out there that really feel like their eye, that, you know, the scales are falling off their eyes about 9/11, and they, you know, they got it figured out. And I've come to a conclusion that a lot of that 9/11 stuff, is diversionary for our side. I've reached a conclusion, Rick, and that is 9/11 is over.
Well,
the question is, how will they do the next one? And you want to know how they'll do the next one? The next one will be a dirty bomb in the port of Baltimore.
Oh, you know what? Maybe yes, maybe no, but it depends on who does it. Now, if you're talking about LCIADA, they're going to choose a target that doesn't hurt the fragile economy because they don't have to do something big. All they have to do is something in some little, it could be your town business, and like a mall or something.
Or a dirty bomb of limited scope inside a container in a port run by the UAE people, and you know, I mean, it's over water. That'll dissipate
fairly
quickly.
They're not going to get this through. This will not stand. This will not stand because he can't fight the Senate on it. Because
dear leader said it was a done deal today, and it's an administrative thing. I don't, you know, that's one of the things. The Senate can sit there and spin on its thumbs. I don't think they got any. They got nothing.
If there is absolutely no way, I mean, it's going to require the effort of the American people, but they're willing to stand on this. He's going to have to reverse himself. And I don't know what that means financially for the nation or what, you know. I mean, if he made a deal like this without publicizing the prior to the deal, and
well,
without
I think,
ever getting any opinion.
You know where I think this has its best value, Rick? I think the best value for us out of this whole port deal is to use it to expose the power of the executive branch. I mean, we heard all about the unitary executive during the Alito hearings, right?
Well, yes, but he's already stacked.
Well, this is the unitary executive, because this was done by virtue of what's that creepy little organization's name? The Commission on American Foreign Investment or something like that. And I mean, that's not, it's not something that's legislative, okay? This is one of those little administrative agencies. This is the unitary executive. You want to wake the country up? You explain to the country that this happened because of a unitary executive, and we got a joker, a new justice on the court who believes that that is just hunky-damn-dory.
You have more than one. I mean, people.
Oh, well, sure, I know that.
How the court is stacked. Roberts is going to rule with Bush no matter what he says.
Right.
And Kennedy will rule with Bush no matter what he says. And Scalia will rule with Bush no matter what he says. You've only got, the majority is now a right-wing rubber stamp court.
Yeah, the only people standing in the way are Souter, Breyer, and Ginsburg.
Yeah, that's it. And that's not a majority.
No, that's 6-3.
Yeah, and so, I mean, they've been planning this out for a long time. I mean, you know, you got people don't, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm smarter than anybody else, because I'm not, but people don't take the time to think about how far these guys play this board out. They've been playing this out for a very long time. Let's take a simple
They've been thing. Playing chess while we've been playing checkers.
That's right. I mean, these guys knew what they were going to do with the courts while they were making their other different laws. Think about the class action lawsuit. Why did they do that? They were ahead of the game of the Vioxx scandal. They knew it was coming, and a few other items. They knew it was coming, and they got that through,
yeah.
And there's nothing that anybody's going to be able to do in a class action lawsuit. Now, you take it all the way to Supreme Court. What happens?
You lose.
It stands. Okay.
Right. Well, and the other thing I'm talking about with this, with the rise of the administrative state and these executive orders and stuff, most people don't remember because the memory hole is so big and so wide and so broad and so deep, and time passes so quickly when you're watching these criminals. No, very few people remember that in, what, May of 2003, with W standing on the USS Abraham Lincoln declaring mission accomplished.
Oh, sure.
That one of the same things that happened concurrent with that, Rick, was the authoring and signature of an executive order that provided blanket immunity to all oil companies doing business in Iraq, making them immune from lawsuits by Iraqis or anybody else.
That's right. It's just like, what was the big deal that was passed on a Saturday? It was on a weekend.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's I'm trying to stay focused on these executive orders.
Yeah,
okay?
I understand. That.
You know, Dick Cheney says that he can out Valerie Plame because in May of March of 2003, April of 2003, right before they outed her, they authored an executive order saying that he could.
Well, I mean, but none of this stuff is new. You can go all the way back. What is it? 1929. When we're still under the War Powers Act.
Yeah,
that gave basically a very. We're really under martial law.
But most Americans have no clue of how much of the American government is run by executive order.
Well, I think that this one here is going to force their hand to do something because they're losing control of the sheep, and they've got an election coming up, and I dread what the October surprise is going to be this year. I dread it. I don't know what they're going to do.
Iran.
But I don't know.
Well, no, I don't think it's Iran. I think maybe it's a limited action with maybe Syria.
I don't even believe that because I don't think any of that will work. I don't think it would pacify them. It's going to have to be something domestic that they do to be able to put the fear of God in everybody. And you know, 9/11 served many masters and solved many problems. And they're running out of time and they're running out of opportunity. And that's all they've got going for them, because the American, I don't know what happened to the home of the brave, but for some reason, they they all changed. All my fellow Americans went into this bizarre concept of save me, protect me, protect me.
Yeah, well, it goes back to that running conversation that we have, Rick, about the contextual ignorance of the American people. And I don't mean to sound like an elitist snob, but I was, you know, when the first time that George Bush trotted out that 9/11 proved that oceans can no longer protect us, you know, I was there. I was there, and I was on the spot. I was on the air, and I said, you know, What kind of an American dumbass believes something, a statement like that? 1814, the British sailed across the Atlantic Ocean, went up the Chesapeake Bay, up the Potomac River, and burnt Washington.
Well, yeah.
And the Atlantic Ocean didn't protect us then. And oceans will no longer protect us after 9/11.
Well, protect Pearl Harbor.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the whole point. It's an entire strategy, Rick, that is predicated on the fundamental ignorance of the American people.
You know, I wish I could believe it was ignorance. I wish I could. But there's something happened to the character of some of these people. And I think they became compromised by their own greed for their own agendas. And I think they were willing to go as far as they wanted, needed to go, thinking that, oh, later we can reverse it, or later we can, you know, make it a little better, to make it better suit us, as long as we're free and those other people aren't. I wish I could believe it was ignorance. I used to think so, but I don't think so anymore. I believe that there's something fundamentally wrong with the American character. And I don't even believe, of course, that it's limited to parties.
Well, why do you think? I mean, okay.
I mean,
but
look at the Democrats that vote against us every day.
Sure, but why do you think? I mean, don't you think that the Project for a New American Century people would have liked to have pulled this off with Poppy Bush in '89? Maybe a lot of this stuff that they're doing, they would have loved to have gotten away with it back then.
The time wasn't right.
Well, and you know why the time wasn't right, Rick? I'll tell you.
Well, we still had a Democratic Congress and Senate, for one.
Well, not just that. I'm talking about the people of the United States. My dad went into the Second World War in 1943. All right?
Mm-hmm.
In 1991, he was, let's see, he was 65. He was still strong enough to get out and get in the streets and raise hell and talk about what he fought for and what his brother died for, okay? That World War II generation would not put up with the crap that has been foisted off now, but that World War II generation is 81, 82, 83, 84, and dead.
Well, sure, but, you know, the Korean vets, they're a lot like the Vietnam vets. I don't understand them. They seem like they got right into this whole, you know, Bushism thing, where, I mean, everyone I talk to, I mean, I'll meet some here and there that knows it's all crap. But the rest of them, again, it's all part of that private agenda. Everybody's got their little Christmas list of things they want, and everybody put it on the tree, and now the tree's tipping over.
Well, yeah, America has been given a Christmas speech by the neocons that, you know, if you'll just give us the power, man, everybody's going to be rich. It's an addict's mentality, Rick. That's what it is.
That's right.
You know,
yeah,
because,
matter of fact, Liz Brown was talking about that this morning. Where she was, did you hear her?
No, I didn't get a chance.
Oh, man, a great show as ever.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, and then everybody can get it up there on White Rose. It's archived there. And what's that station that broadcasts? It streams it live every day.
Oh, I can't. Offhand, I can't remember. If Ben's listening, I'll know in a minute.
Well, he'll tell you, sure.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is that you had a caller, just an average everyday lady, And she calls up, and she explained it like they were crack addicts. They were behaving like crack. They had a good laugh over it. How they start, once the money runs out, they start selling things. The next thing you know, they're at the pawn shop, and they're selling off their stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what she was relating to this whole ports thing, because they managed to scrape out of it, what is it, $3.6 billion?
Yeah, I mean, it ain't chump change.
Yeah, but I mean...
I mean, that's 3 or 4 days worth in Iraq.
I mean, geez, I mean... $3.6 billion for that, $2 million to kill the commodities program for old starving people.
Yeah.
I mean, he needs every little penny he can get. So I agree with the lady that called in.
Yeah, it's a perfect analogy. I've used the junkie analogy for a long, long time because it's most applicable. Hey, we got to get out of here, Rick. Thanks for the great conversation.
Always, Bob.
It's always a blast. Take
See
care.
See you later, Gator.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, quick break, and then we come back and take it downhill. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Mother doesn't go out anymore. Just sits at home and rolls her spastic eyes. But every weekend through the door come words of wisdom from the world outside. If you want to know about the bishop and the actress, if you want to know how to be a star, if you want to know about the stains on the mattress, you can read it in the Sunday papers. Sunday papers. Mother's wheelchair stays out in the hall.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just wanted to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway.
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Alrighty then, 25 minutes and change before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, and a couple of things that I said I wanted to get to. Now, I mentioned earlier, I want you to understand what goes on inside the heads of these religion industry monsters, these people who pervert the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. They're in love with politics, among other things. Now, you know, when I was growing up in it, the Southern Baptist Church was a racist institution. I understand that. I wasn't old enough or wise enough to know it at the time. And the little old blue-haired ladies down in the basement did a pretty doggone good job with me, I thought. But there was, you know, there was other stuff going on, but the other stuff that was going on wasn't political. It might have been racist, but it wasn't political. They didn't want anything to do with politics. You stay out of you stay out of our pulpit, we'll stay out of your voting booth. All that changed with Jerry Falwell. All that changed with the rise of probably one of the single most irreligious presidents that we've ever had in the form of, you know, Ronnie Reagan. But now, like I said, I'm on the mailing list for these bizarre people. And this, what's this clown's name? Rusty Weller. Some sort of internet pastor. For God's sakes, don't spin his hit counter, okay? Don't go looking for him. I'll just tell you about what he's doing. Petition to ban women from ballot. Mentioned this earlier. And this is their pitch. The U.S. Constitution prevents Hillary Rodham Clinton or any woman from serving as president. Contrary to what feminists think. Now listen, I want to crawl around inside their skull, okay? Contrary to what feminists think, the 19th Amendment did not degender our nation's highest office. Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution declares 16 times the president will be a man. That's right, men only. Women need not apply. Sexist? Maybe, but that's the law of the land. Don't think it's right? Then change it with a constitutional amendment. Do you hear that? Sexist? Maybe, but that's the law of the land. Now, Rusty Weller is doing this not because, you know, he loves Jesus or anything like that. He's doing this because he is a Republican hate monger, and as a consequence of that, he is terrified of Hillary Clinton. It's part of the game to shove Hillary down our throats. They want to pick Hillary in 08 just like they picked John Kerry in 04. So this business about, you know, keep Hillary off the ballot, you know, 19th Amendment doesn't give women the right to run for president. The Constitution says that the president's going to be a guy. Well, see, that's where these so-called strict constructionists fall all to pieces. Because, of course, when the Constitution was ratified, we still had slavery, didn't we? Of course we did. And a whole great number of the signatories and ratifiers of the Constitution were slave owners. Pure and simple. Now, following that logic, the Constitution says that the president will be a man, but the Constitution was ratified at a time when ratified when women didn't have the vote, and guess what? Neither did black people. They weren't even citizens. They weren't even people. So the question, you know, this is how easily these little right wing hateful houses of cards fall apart. If, as they say, Article 2, Section 1 forbids a woman from being president of the United States, guess what else? Somebody call Barack Obama. Because he is said to have had presidential aspirations somewhere along the line. Somebody call Barack Obama and let him know that the wrong-wingers don't think brown people can be president. Because that is, after all, an originalist interpretation of the Constitution. Well, you know, Bob, we had an amendment to the Constitution that said that you know, full civil rights be granted to former slaves and all kinds of... Guess what? It doesn't... If the 19th Amendment, which gives women the vote, doesn't allow them to run for political office, neither then do any of the post-Civil War amendments allow... a black man, a red man, to run for office either. That is, and that's what I'm trying to get across. We are dealing with unrepentant, unreconstructed, pure, old-fashioned, so-called states' rights, Confederate Klansmen. Welcome to the grand old party. You know, the list of people that they do like is a hell of a lot shorter than the list of the ones they don't. They don't like black people. They don't like women. They don't like Jews. They don't like liberals. They don't like Arabs. Who do they like? They like people like George Bush. White bread and pure as the driven slush, Simon Simple and Simon Pure. I mean, I think you probably get it. Now, this book that I have been prattling about all night, the name of it again, The United States of Appalachia, How Southern Mountaineers Brought Independence, Culture, and Enlightenment to America. And the author of the book is Jeff Biggers, B-I-G-G-E-R-S, Jeff Biggers, The United States of Appalachia. If you go through any of the bookseller ports at whiteRoseSociety.org, you won't have any problem laying your hands on it. But what I wanted to, the part, I was just, I like to read before I go to bed. And I ran across a couple of things in a chapter called All the News That's Fit to Print. And we are forever talking about how hard it is to get our message out on our side of the fight, and how corporate media is utterly controlled, our complaints. Well, there in this chapter, there is discussion of a woman by the name of Anne Royal, R-O-Y-A-L-L. She was, she hailed from a place that's, probably not even 50 miles from where I am right now. Blogging. This is the fun part. Blogging was born of a West Virginia woman. She was tried in Washington, D.C. in the summer of 1829 for being what was called then a common scold. She is described in this book as a demure, squat, graying woman in her 60s. Andrew Jackson, Secretary of War, had testified in her defense. But she, among other things, she had been pushed down a flight of stairs in New England, horsewhipped in Pennsylvania, and chased out of towns and inns on the Atlantic coast. She started out as a travel writer. She was the daughter of a maid working for Major William Royal. He served under Washington and Lafayette in the American Revolution and went to what is now Greenbrier County in West Virginia. And as an age, he was an aging gentleman, and he married this woman. Well, her family fought the will, took all the money away from her. And then, this is the fun part, she decided that she was tired of being silent, and she cranked up one of the first personal newspapers in the United States. It was called, let me see if I can find it. It was called Paul Pry. It was named after a character in an English play that was current at the time. And what she did was, she did the same thing that you can see at Digby, Coase, Eschaton, Bartkop. She did the same thing that Jovecchio does. The same thing that our buddies at WD-40 do. She stood there and poked a finger in the hypocritical eye of the establishment. And I knew that I loved her the minute I started reading about her, because you know who she despised the most? Organized religion. In fact, you want to hear how classy the religion industry was? And the whole point of mentioning all of this is this. I keep talking about context and perspective. Context and perspective. The ignorance of the American people is nothing new. It has a new patina. It has a new coat of paint. There are new ways of keeping the American people dirt ignorant. But the concept itself is nothing new. We are talking about 1832. We're talking about 175 years ago. And her newspaper. Well, of her newspaper, it said, tell me if this doesn't sound like a blog, okay? Paul Pry delighted most in its discovery of government graft. Becoming a self-appointed whistleblower on Capitol Hill, Anne Royal attended congressional meetings, haunted government buildings, and interviewed low-level employees, always in the search of fraud. She became obsessed with the inner workings of the post office department. Her pen portraits shifted towards office holders and Washington socialites. She would interview every American president over the next 20 years. Is this anything? This is the stuff that Brad Friedman does at bradblog.com. She was despised by a significant sector of the... oh, dear, there's that word again. She was despised by a significant sector of the conservative mainstream. And I'm reading directly from the book. I don't think Mr. Biggers will mind the publicity. We'll be having him on the show, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. By 1832, the newspaper was a veritable, though still debt-ridden success. Emphasis on debt-ridden. With subscriptions nationwide. It was the internet of its time, the post office. While her fans and zealous connections cushioned a lot of the ridicule. Now, this is the classiness. This is how nice the religious right has always been in this country. Royals' detractors continued to be merciless. The New England Religious Weekly, okay, referred to her as an old hag who printed all the, quote, scum, Billingsgate, and filth extant. Because she found out about a move that was afoot to create, we've heard this one before too, to create a Christian party in America. Okay? By 1827, the outspoken Presbyterian minister Ezra Stiles Ely in Philadelphia had announced a move to create a Christian party. His interdenominational followers launched a campaign to, Dominionists, you ain't doing nothing new. Launched a campaign to elect Christian politicians with a less than secretive plan to amend the Constitution with a, here we go again, declared national religion. Because, you see, by 1827, there was no small number of, you know, Jews in the United States. And there's always, Christianity has always led the charge in hating people of the Jewish faith. Royal called Ely a... God, I love her. You know what? Somewhere down the road, I think we're going to have to found the Anne Royal Society. Sort of hand-in-hand tandem with the White Rose Society and their Ben's homage to Hans and Sophie Scholl. This lone woman who did not even have the right to vote in America, a widow who was literally penniless, who bought an old printing press on credit, created a national demand for her newspaper, and she called Minister Ezra Stiles Ely a, my heart warms, a monster. Dedicating a large portion of her first black book to the machinations of missionaries, Royal's word essentially for all Protestants. Oh God, I love her. She described revival meetings in severe terms. Heard that before? And attacked Ely's new American Tract Society as a front for treasonous behavior. Do you think Jerry Falwell is new? Do you think Pat Robertson is new? James Kennedy at the Coral Snake Ministries, do you think he's new? What did we talk about at the front of the show? What Bob asked me, what was the line, what were the words that Benjamin Franklin said to have spoken when someone asked him outside the meeting hall what kind of government the Constitutional Convention had come up with, and Ben Franklin is said to have responded, a republic, if you can keep it. And from the day that this nation was born, it has been under attack by the people who would like to subvert it.
And those people have, by and large, almost routinely been members of the religion industry. Gospel sharps, as Mark Twain called them. The missionary's object, she declared, is to plunge, quote, is to plunge mankind into ignorance, to make him a bigot, a fanatic, a hypocrite, a heathen, to hate every sect but his own, to shut his eyes against the truth, harden his heart against the distress of his fellow man, and purchase heaven with money. Context. Perspective. A newspaper in Montgomery, Alabama, praised her campaign in opposition to fanaticism. A blue-skinned merchant pushed the 60-year-old gadfly down a flight of stairs in Burlington, Vermont, giving her a broken leg and a concussion. She would get her revenge in her next black book. After the trial for being a common scold, she found out she was broke. And she went on to found a new newspaper. And she had to go begging. Just like we do now. Just like so much of the common sense blogosphere and radio has to hold its hand out. Listen to this. Assembling the remains of an old Ramage press, discarded type, and a staff of two orphans as printer's devils, Royal printed the first issue of Paul Pry from her kitchen in 1831. I can see our kitchen from here, in case you're wondering. Her stated mission was hardly modest. The newspaper declared its independence in patriotic terms. Quote, the welfare and happiness of our country is our politics. It issued a headlong assault on the rise of evangelicals and the fear instilled by Nat Turner's slave rebellion, which had occurred only months before. Quote, as for those cannibals, the contemporaries of Negro insurgents, we shall meet them upon their own ground, that of extermination. Let all pious generals, colonels, and commanders of our army and navy who make war upon old women beware. Do we have any pious generals, colonels, and commanders of our army and navy who make war on old women now? Seen any of the pictures from Fallujah? Anywhere else in Iraq? Let all pious postmasters who cheat the government by franking pious tracts beware. Let all pious booksellers who take pious bribes beware. But at the end of it all, she said this, and let all old bachelors and old maids be married as soon as possible. And she went on to mention that she was broke. And she had to take subscriptions. She had to take whatever monies would come in the mail. And she was amazing. But never mind the story itself. Please, for those of you who think that we are facing something new, we're not. But the thing is, at every time that this kind of evil has arisen in this country, there have been Anne Royals to stand up against it. And they've been broke. And they have had pockets they could turn inside out and never hear a blessed thing jingle on the pavement. But they have gone on and they have done it. And they have saved this nation time and time and time and time again. So you can do it too. We can do it too. And like I said, and the same thing applied with Anne Royal. She wasn't dealing with geniuses on the other side. She was dealing with religion industry fanatics and freaks, and as she said, monsters.
and the great-great multi-great grandsons and granddaughters of those monsters are afoot in the land today. They were stopped once, they were stopped twice, they were stopped thrice. We can stop them again. I don't know about you, but I find that incredibly inspiring to know that the history of the United States, you know, but you're not going to hear about this in your class in elementary school or junior high or high school. The hell, you're not going to hear about it in college. You got to go find it for yourself. And you let that inspiration take hold of you. And you let it move you. And you look at your neighbor and you help, and you hope that you can show them the light. And when the two of you have seen the light, you share it exponentially again and again and again. We have won this fight time and time and time again, and we will win it now. They will not succeed as long as we choose not to let them. Right? I think so. So thank you very much for joining Agnes and me tonight. Thanks for the calls, the emails. Thanks for sitting around in the quiet of your home and maybe hollering Amen Bob once in a while or dancing around the room. Thank you. You're saving a nation. The show tonight was produced by my lovely wife Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. Engineered by Randy Kerbway, a patriot, a friend of mine.